Hello, it's Hannah Gelbart here. You're listening to What in the World from the BBC World Service. And I've got Alex from the team here in the studio with me because we are doing a follow-up to an episode we did a couple of weeks ago.
Hello, Hannah. Yeah, we did an episode looking at Emma Coronel, the wife of one of the most notorious drug lords in the world, El Chapo, and her impact on pop culture. And as part of that episode...
Which you can download wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
You certainly can. As part of that episode, right at the end, we touched on fentanyl, which is this incredibly deadly drug which has been causing huge problems in the US and Canada. There wasn't enough time then to get fully into it, but we wanted to take a closer look at it.
Yeah, there is loads to unpack here. So in this episode, we're asking, what is fentanyl and why is it causing so many deaths in North America? Right, so let's get started on that first question. Last year in the US, almost 110,000 people died from a drug overdose. That's a record number. And more than 60% of all of those deaths were caused by fentanyl. So we've asked Dr. Smita Mundasad from the BBC's health team to explain what the drug is and what it does to you.
Prescription fentanyl is a strong painkiller. Doctors often prescribe it when you have severe pain. For example, if you've had a really bad injury or if someone has pain from cancer. It belongs to a group of drugs called opioids. You might have heard of one called morphine, which is made from natural substances found in certain poppy plants. Fentanyl, on the other hand, is made in laboratories and it's about 50 to 100 times stronger than morphine. The reason fentanyl is such a good painkiller is because it blocks pain signals between the brain and the body. It works on proteins on nerve cells called opioid receptors. These receptors are involved in how people feel pain and also pleasure. So people can feel relaxed and euphoric too. Addiction and overdoses are becoming a major growing problem. Overdoses from prescribed or illicit fentanyl can make your breathing shallow, slow your heart rate, and make you lose consciousness.
So, as she said, it was created to be a medical painkiller, and doctors prescribe it in tiny amounts. But most of the fentanyl on the streets isn't exactly stolen from hospitals or misused prescriptions, right?
No, it isn't. It's generally made in factories in China solely for illegal purposes. It then gets shipped over to Mexico, all the chemicals that go into it do. Then this is where El Chapo and people like him come into this. The cartels smuggle it across the border with the United States.
I remember in our last episode, we talked about the reports. There was this kind of news line that El Chapo's sons are supposedly saying they're not going to smuggle fentanyl into the US anymore because it kills so many people.
Yeah, and the people we spoke to said that that's probably just a cartel publicity stunt because it basically makes them just too much money for them to ever stop.
And fentanyl isn't some shameful secret in the US. It's an open problem that politicians from all sides say needs to be fixed. And the effects of it are being felt in every state and every community, including those that are traditionally more affluent. Darren Stuhlkup is an activist and he lives in San Francisco in California. That's the home of Silicon Valley and the Golden Gate Bridge. But in recent years, it's had a real drug problem. And Darren has filmed people lying unconscious on the streets. He sent us this voice note.
While on top of the hill might be nice, Golden Gate Park might be nice, the Golden Gate Bridge might be nice, the beach might be nice. Walking around downtown San Francisco, it's not uncommon to see tents, bodies on the ground, discarded used needles, tin foil tainted with fentanyl tumbling in the wind, like tumbleweeds. And long story short, people are severely addicted to fentanyl and they're homeless on the streets and they're most likely struggling with mental health as well as physical health issues. People are so addicted to fentanyl that they are resorting to stealing. And whatever they steal, they sell for money, and with that money they buy more fentanyl. It's a horrible cycle, honestly. Fentanyl showing up in schools, and electronic tobacco vaporizers, everything in between, party pills. They're putting fentanyl in weed nowadays. My cousin Scotty was buying weed, and they put fentanyl in it, and he's no longer with us. Rest in peace, Scotty. We love you, and we miss you. It's really bad, honestly.
So it does sound pretty bleak. And last week, San Francisco hosted a meeting between President Biden and China's President Xi Jinping. They talked about a lot of things, but one of the interesting things is that fentanyl was on the agenda.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I spoke about to Nadine Youssef. She's a BBC journalist based in Canada, and she's written a big article looking at fentanyl and what experts are calling the fourth wave of North America's drug crisis. In it, she says that around a decade ago, about 10% of fatal drug overdoses in the US were caused by fentanyl. As we said at the start, that is now more than 60%. So I asked Nadine, what happened?
I think there's a couple of reasons why. For one, there's ease of access. Over the years, it's sort of become a routine part of the drug supply across the US. You know, we saw it sort of creeping in first in California and on the West Coast. Now you see that it's made its way, you know, across to the East and basically throughout the United States. It's also highly addictive. So when someone starts using fentanyl, it's really difficult to stop without some severe withdrawal symptoms. So that drives up sort of the demand for it. It's also a cheap drug. I do think there's a lot of other societal factors at play, things like unemployment, housing insecurity, lack of mental health support. It's sort of, you know, those things kind of keep people in a cycle of addiction. And so you kind of see the problem getting worse rather than better.
Fentanyl deaths happen all over the world. They happen in Europe and then in other parts of the world, but nothing on the scale that we've seen in the US and Canada. What is it that means it's become such a problem there?
There's a variety of reasons. I think, you know, some of the stuff that we talked about before, like ease of access, cost, and, you know, just like socioeconomic factors. There's a history of prescription opioid use in the US. So, you know, in the 90s, the US had a really big problem with prescription opioids, in which people were prescribed highly addictive painkillers by doctors who then developed a dependency on it. Some of those people have actually moved on from, you know, getting it as prescription and then, you know, going to the illegal drug market. But really, the face of like fentanyl use looks so different now from, you know, when prescription use dominated it. Now it really is driven by the illegal market. So the trend has, you know, shifted dramatically.
Yeah, well, that brings me on to the next question, really, because in this article you wrote for the BBC, it's still online if you want to check it on the BBC website, you mentioned the fourth wave of fentanyl. What do you mean by the fourth wave?
Yeah, so I'll break it down by each wave. The first wave, like we mentioned, there was a rise in opioid prescription deaths that started in the 1990s. Then there was the second wave, which, you know, kind of happened around in 2010. And that's the rise in heroin overdose deaths, which is also an opioid. Then the third wave, and this is in 2013, so just a few years after, we saw a rise in synthetic opioid overdose deaths. So that's the fentanyl that we see on the streets today. You know, now we're in this fourth wave where we're now seeing people, you know, die not just from fentanyl, but also another drug in their system, like cocaine or methamphetamine. Basically, some people are using fentanyl right now to intensify the high of another drug. Of course, the problem is fentanyl is kind of like playing Russian roulette in that it's highly potent and it's really hard to determine how much of it can be lethal. And then, you know, another thing that we're seeing is that some people are actually using fentanyl without knowing, because street drugs are now being laced with it since it's cheaper to manufacture. Basically, we're sort of seeing this trend now where people are using, you know, fentanyl with another drug intentionally or unintentionally. And the reason why researchers make that distinction is because, you know, they believe that the way that we're trying to tackle this crisis and just treat people for opioid addiction or opioid dependency is no longer effective. It's no longer the way that we can go about this, because now we have to sort of think about making addiction treatment programs for people who are using more than one drug. So, you know, all of it kind of just paints a picture of how fentanyl use has changed over the years, but also just how much of a growing problem it is in the US.
So we know that most of the fentanyl in the US anyway is coming from China. It's getting made in labs in China. It's often coming to Mexico. Cartels are then smuggling it across the border into the United States and then up into Canada. President Xi Jinping of China and President Biden of the US have met recently, and they've kind of sort of agreed a deal to kind of hopefully try and limit this. Is that right?
Yeah. So like you mentioned, President Joe Biden and President Xi Jinping have sort of met to talk about this, among other issues. And they basically drafted a plan in which China would do more to basically curb the export of items that are used to produce fentanyl to the United States. You know, the way that it was sort of framed, he basically said it's going to save lives and that, you know, China is really committed to the issue. I guess they're hoping to see some progress from that. I think it's worth worth noting that there's similar moves that have been done in the past to curb production from China, like in the recent past. And, you know, the effects of that when China sort of cracks down on what's going on in its own country with respect to fentanyl production is that we now see drug manufacturers are starting to look at other places to source the material that they need to make fentanyl, like India, which is why India is sort of emerging as a player when before it wasn't that significant. And so, you know, I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether these measures will actually lead to a reversal in the lethal trend that we are seeing.
So President Biden has high hopes that this new deal will yield results. Here's Darren again talking about how San Francisco was cleaned up, but only for as long as the big conference was in town.
President Biden came to San Francisco and everything was clean for about a week. And following the conclusion of the Asian Pacific Economic Cooperation Conference, the refentanylization of San Francisco happened almost overnight. And now we are back to seeing people using fentanyl, smoking and injecting fentanyl. Will it get better? That depends on local leaders. You know, we need sustainable, long-term solutions. We need community outreach teams. A lot of these people on the streets have open wounds and inflated limbs. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that these less fortunate people on the streets need a doctor.
So, yeah, this drug is just really, really nasty. Some people don't even know they're taking it until it's too late. And like Darren says, it can have a big impact on entire communities. At the moment, it's mainly a North America problem. But you just know that governments around the world will be keeping an eye on fentanyl to make sure that it doesn't get its hooks into their countries.
Thanks so much for joining us, Alex.
Thank you.
We're going to have a look at Argentina now. The country's presidential elections ended over the weekend. The winner was Javier Milei. He landed around 56% of the vote, and he's a pretty interesting candidate. Here's BBC reporter Mimi Swaby, who has been following this. Javier Milei's win is a shock. He is an outsider who, until a few months ago, was little known about. When he announced his entry into politics in 2020 in a bid to blow up the system, very few people would have predicted that only 3 years later, this libertarian, far-right economist and former TV personality would be the next president of Argentina. So what is he offering? Milei has some very drastic proposals to reset the economy and the state, which have made him very controversial and this election incredibly divisive. Argentina is suffering its worst economic crisis in decades. So in a bid to reduce soaring inflation, currently over 140%, he plans to ditch the Argentine peso, dollarize the economy and eliminate the central bank. He even turned up to one campaign rally wielding a running chainsaw to symbolize how he will slash the government's size and its spending. Aside from the economy, some of his social plans are also very polarizing. He wants to criminalize abortion and relax gun rules. Javier Milei has been likened to US former President Donald Trump and is a quirky individual to say the least, with reports of him speaking to his dead dogs for political advice, as well as his characteristic unruly hair, thick sideburns and rock star leather jacket. He will be a president unlike Argentina has ever seen before. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Hannah Gelbart. This is What in the World from the BBC World Service. Get in touch with us, send us an email. All of our details are in the show notes, and we'll see you next time. Bye.